Can you count the stars that brightly twinkle in the midnight sky? Can you count the stars so lightly o'er the meadows floating by? God the Lord doth mark their number with his eyes that never slumber. He hath made them every one. Henry Dolken. On the 30th of August, 1816, a new MacDougall entered the world. Charlotte Marie, named after her grandmother, came out screaming, louder than the five other MacDougalls that arrived the same way. Maybe it was merely whining, but maybe, just maybe, her spirit was mourning her mother. The faint whispers that Brianna MacDougall left the world with were simple promises to Duncan, to find someone that could help him raise their menagerie of children. The crowd of Ulster Scots that was the MacDougall family moved all along Appalachia, from the southern tip of South Carolina to the northern reaches of Maryland. However, they finally settled in the median of the mountains, that being the town of Ricketsville in Virginia. As soon as the family moved in, Duncan reached out to the community in search of somebody who could help him take care of the rest of his family. One wizened Marianne Ferguson, married to Frank Ferguson, agreed to work for Duncan as a nanny. Dinner, diapers, and dishes were all part of her responsibilities, but she soon accrued a set of other tasks that were unwarranted by Duncan. Marianne took command of the MacDougall household, chastising the children for not understanding manners, or even knowing the Lord's Prayer. Duncan appreciated her efforts of teaching his children respect, but when she started employing excessive means of discipline, that was where he drew the line. The oldest MacDougall, Carmichael, attested to her beating him with a switch hard enough that it drew blood, all for mocking Marianne's aged look. Gavin pointed out her very blackened teeth, and so he went an entire day without eating. And 4-year-old Charlotte was told that she was going to burn in hell if she didn't straighten up her room and wash her face every morning. Marianne called Duncan spineless, deeming him an unfit parent, while Duncan wrote her off as a tyrannical and domineering hag. It was then he realized why the Fergusons had no children. He sought to have a word with Frank about his wife's behavior, but he dismissed it as her way of showing affection, caring for the children. Duncan was filled with disgust and demanded that she never come close to his household ever again. Words of hate spewed from both their mouths, their exchanges as foul as sailors. Moving past the trauma was hard for the MacDougall family, but Duncan managed to acquire the help of a young lady, kind and helpful, yet strong and leading. Her name? Robin Moore. The Moore family was one of the first to properly welcome Duncan and his family into Ricketsville, and Robin was known as one of the sweetest and prettiest girls in town. Throughout her time at the MacDougall household, she served as Charlotte's personal caretaker. Carmichael liked the thought that he was in charge of his brothers, despite Robin's commanding presence over them. But the house was soon to be restless, stained in gossip and deceit. A rumor spread throughout the town that Duncan was responsible for her disappearance, supposedly killing her and dumping her body in an alcove deep in the forest. Duncan, outraged at the preposterous claim, soon found out that Frank Ferguson put forth the initial accusation. He presumed it was from the bitterness the Fergusons harbored from all those years ago, and while he was somewhat correct, there was also reason to believe that he was also responsible for the death of another woman. Found in the woods with a deep gash in her chest, Marianne Ferguson had been missing for over 4 months, until some of the lumberjacks found her body. Duncan was suspect number one to many. He had a motive, a murder weapon, and connections to the lumber mill. But Duncan was willing to go to court to prove his innocence, and ultimately, throughout all the investigations, there were no clear suspects. Frank never pushed to accuse Duncan anymore, and supposedly moved from Rickardsville only a year later. But the damage was done, and the rumors morphed into an urban legend. A curse hanging over the McDougal household. Some said the devil was working on that ground. Others claimed it was the spirits of the dead. During the Moore Ferguson case, the McDougal boys were of age to live at home by themselves, as long as Charlotte was cared for as well. Of all her brothers, Carmichael was Charlotte's favorite. She wouldn't admit it, since she imagined the others would get jealous, keyword being imagined. But it was true regardless. He even taught her how to sew, something that Charlotte grew to adore, and she even carried it into her adulthood. Many times when the local boys were calling her and her siblings cursed, out came Carmichael with a vicious tone in his voice and shovel in hand, scattering the crowd and ushering Charlotte back home. His threat was always the same. "You speak to my sister like that again, and I'll be sure to bury you where your mamas won't find you." The house was in an uproar once again. Carmichael went missing. Duncan was more than perturbed. He was in panic. Pure, agonizing panic. Just like Robin and Marianne. Who was tormenting them? Who had they wronged? Frank had been out of the picture for 3 years, and Rickardsville had been docile for a long time. Did Carmichael just leave? He had no reason to. Maybe there was no reason. Perhaps he simply wanted to. But he never voiced any desires to leave, let alone go anywhere. It was hard for any of them to fathom this happening. The McDougal family was shaken. Some presumed it was comeuppance for Duncan's rumored actions. But it didn't matter. A member of the family was gone, regardless of his true whereabouts. Charlotte felt lost and out of control, alone in an eternally overcast world. In the years to come, none of her brothers, not even Gavin or Theo, were able to connect to her. As she turned 18, it was hard for anyone to imagine her growing close to anyone else than she did to Carmichael. But she did stand against the townsfolk who would demean her. If Carmichael taught her one thing, it was how to stand up for herself. She couldn't rely on anyone to do it for her anymore. But a deep wound was still carved into her soul. It was difficult to fill. And then, he came along. Sebastian Moore, Robin's younger brother, began showing interest in Charlotte. He, along with his family, were unconvinced of the rumors. Of course, they knew the family from day one. While the rest of the Moore family was closed off from the community after Robin's disappearance, Sebastian instead reached out to others. To Charlotte. Their shared loss of a loved one allowed them to process their grief, and even move on from the pain. They felt at peace, not just with their losses, but also with each other. Charlotte felt like Sebastian made her whole again, like her love of sewing and knitting was rekindled. Sebastian longed for somebody to make him smile, something he hadn't experienced in a long time. Only a year later, and they married, moving into a quaint patch of land out in the woods. Charlotte started selling some of the clothes she made, while Sebastian worked as a carpenter. The forest lent itself to silence. The kind that Charlotte and Sebastian adored, the kind they wanted for privacy. When a pairing arises, children are soon to follow. At least, they should have for Charlotte. They did for a time, but the Reaper told them otherwise. Charlotte was pregnant 4 separate times, but all ended in suffering. It was as if the world itself denied them any amount of joy. But despite the pain, they pushed onward, with a desire in mind and a promise to fulfill to each other. And as a reward for their tenacity, they were given a miracle. Twins, a boy and a girl. They named them Asher and Riley. It was blossoming hope for the Moors, something to brighten their gloomy spirits. It was something to celebrate. And celebrate they did. That was, until a chance encounter. It was past midnight, and Charlotte could hear the gentle wailings of her children from their bed. Quietly, gently, she skulked out of the bedroom and off to her offspring to quell their cries. The narrow, winding halls of their home, illuminated by mere candlelight, stretched and coiled like the tendrils of an ancient oaken tree, a labyrinth of doors and corners that never seemed to end. Step after step, and Charlotte finally reached the door to the children's room. Asher and Riley were silent. With the twist of a knob and the creak of a wooden door, Charlotte was met with a sight her eyes were not beholden to. Her hands began to quake, nearly causing her to drop her candle. The draft of an April breeze through the open window was no longer an Arcadian embrace. It was a cold, drifting nightmare. A tall shadow, mangy linen, mantled across his hunched shoulders. Charlotte could hear its voice humming a lullaby, except it sang a rhapsody of the devil. The cribs were empty. The sluggish patter of bare feet, followed by a bobbing motion from the shape before her, made Charlotte's throat nearly erupt in horror. After a sharp breath, she tried to verbalize her fear, but her lungs were held, suspended, almost expanded to the point of bursting. No sound left her mouth, and her body remained still, suspended like the strings of a puppet. The shape turned, revealing two infants nestled in its arms. They were long. Everything about it was. Its fingers, its arms, its yellowed chipped nails. Across every inch of its sagging skin were stitches, some taut to the point that it was pulling regions together into pinched growths of flesh. The only things visible from beneath its hood were its teeth. Two rows of black, nearly rotting teeth twisted into a gaunt smile. "Go back to sleep, m'lady," its voice hissed, whistling from the gaps in its teeth. "You have nothing to fear. I always watch over your children. When they scream, when they eat, when they play, when they sleep, I am always watching them. If they ever do anything wrong, then it's 10 lashes across the back. And if they don't straighten up, then it's off with a finger." Charlotte's skin grew cold. Her eyes started to dart between her babies and the thing holding them in its embrace, her heart pounding to the point of a heart attack. The silhouette's jaws then quivered open, lowering all the way to its collarbone. And a daggerish tongue coiled out. Its breath reeked of spoiled dairy and tobacco as it finally whispered, "And when they're off your hands, they'll be mine forever." It then licked the quaint infants' faces, lathering smears of oily spit all over their skin. In rage and horror, Charlotte squirmed with all her might. Her body refused to budge. Then the shape lifted Asher up towards its maw, its tendril of a tongue wrapped around its neck. Charlotte tried to close her eyes, but every part of her being was trapped in her own body. It was only a moment before its teeth snapped shut. A simple glimpse of blood, and Charlotte was reeling on the ground, screaming and crying at the foot of the cribs. Her children joined in her painful song, their sleep disturbed by the howling. Sebastian barged into the room, meeting Charlotte on the ground. She tried to explain what happened, As she tried to describe the thing that left its shadow in the room, she couldn't speak coherently. Only nonsensical gibberish flowed from her mouth, like the mutterings of madness. Sebastian and Charlotte then took Asher and Riley, and cradled them until the sun rose again. A proper embrace. Word went around town about the events that transpired that night, and some thought it was hysteria, Charlotte being a woman, after all. Sebastian couldn't argue with it, but he knew his wife better than others. It was something else. After that, Charlotte was inseparable from the children. She would always stay in their room, staying awake for the entirety of the night, always vigilant. Charlotte was always sequestered in the house, but there were many times when others would come to the Moore's abode, either to visit the family for their services or to converse with them. An old friend of the family, a lady named Julia, came over to talk with Charlotte about making her a scarf for the coming fall season. The house oozed hospitality, with the gently swaying trees, the vibrantly colored leaves, and a tea kettle resting over a fire. As Charlotte began to pour their tea, she noticed Julia was missing. She heard a shushing from the children's room. There she stood, Julia, reaching down towards a distraught Riley. Charlotte's mind no longer saw peace. All she saw was a threat to her children. The scalding tea kettle in her hand was no longer an object of gentility, but an instrument of her wrath. A single splash, and Julia was kneeling on the floor, clutching her face and shrieking in pain. Steam rolled off of her boiled skin as she gazed up towards Charlotte, jealousy stirring in her eyes. After her arrest, some believed that Charlotte went completely mad. She would scream for her children, demanding that she would keep them safe. Clearly, she was unfit to live with Sebastian. The couple's relationship strained afterwards, Sebastian being afraid that she would hurt the children. But everything she said was pointing towards a looming fear. Charlotte was afraid, too. Word came back to Rickardsville in 1866 that a horrible accident occurred in Kentucky. Riley and Asher were to take the railway to Texas, but the twins started to walk onto the tracks. A whole slew of passengers tried to call out to them, but they kept on trekking, oblivious to any concerns sent their way. They were called on a different path, by a voice that knew right from wrong. And as that fateful whistle announced the oncoming train, so did it hearken the newest pilgrims to paradise. Hi everyone, this is Connor. This is the executive producer, writer, narrator for Hold County, Virginia. I'd like to thank you very much for listening to the second episode of Hold County, Virginia. If you'd like to support the series, please do subscribe to the channel, give this episode a like, comment down below, whatever you'd like, leave a comment of some kind, maybe some feedback, maybe some theories and whatnot. And also, do not forget to follow me on different social medias. Those links are going to be in the description. As well, there will be a link to the Discord channel for not only Holt County, Virginia, but also my other projects that I have planned. But yeah. I'd like to thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I'm really, really excited to continue the series. Well, I hope that you enjoyed it, and that you all have a great one. See you all later.